if I do it in a garage, and maybe if I did it with it, and then you could stay with it. Okay, but there's a point where you say, look, you got the right answer here, all right? Mm-hmm. Move on.
Enough is enough.
Enough is enough. And you'll spend the rest of your life re-demonstrating something that you already showed was true in the first few experiments. Now, in all fairness, you could be biased in every one of those experiments. You got to get somebody else to do it. And somebody else who wants to prove you wrong, and then they end up showing that you're right. When that happens enough times, we're done. We're done.
You didn't describe science this year, right there. You described a drug problem.
And what is it? There's a famous definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Mm-hmm. Is that a definition of insanity?
I think it works.
That's what works.
but I wanted to say also that in terms of when enough is enough, that something that I think is missed sometimes is that science is not out to demonstrate the truth. Science is out to find out what's false. And so you don't verify hypotheses. You set out to reject them. And when you think you have evidence, you say that you have validated the hypothesis, which means basically that it is true for now until somebody finds something against it. But when you reject something, you reject it once, and that's good enough. You find evidence that there is a condition, I don't care if it's at dark or at night or when I'm jumping on one leg, where this phenomenon does not happen, and that can serve to reject a hypothesis.
Okay. So now, you know, really what you just said there is we never know what we're talking about.
No, that's right.
That's okay. That's all right.
Well, coming up after the break, we're going to explore the dark side of illusion and magic on Star Talk.
What if life is a magic trick? Some quick sleight of hand just to make us think.
This is Star Talk.
Will we be alright?
We're back. Star Talk, the Rose Center for Earth and Space, containing the Hayden Planetarium. Chuck, Susanna, thanks for being on the show. We've been talking about the science of illusion, featuring my interview with Penn and Teller. And for this segment, I want to talk about the dark side of illusion and magic. And, you know, magic and science has a long history, long overlap. And it turns out that magicians, I didn't know this until we did some homework on this, that magicians have been on the forefront of the application of technology to their trade. Okay, fine. If you got a new toy, a new bit of technology, use it. Exploit it. Don't have a problem. But if you are diabolical, you are visiting the dark side of how technology not only can be used, but abused. I brought this up with Penn and Teller. Let's check it out.
There's some very, very unpleasant things with magicians using technology. There's the light heavy box, which was the use of electromagnetism that was used to show that white man's magic was better than black man's magic during uprisings in Algeria.
Whoa.
They sent down Robert Houdin, right? They sent down Robert Houdin, who Houdini got his name from, the French magician, to keep the blacks down in Africa. The idea was we're going to bring this box, and they brought a box on stage and said, bring up the strongest man from the tribe. And the strongest man from the tribe came up and they said, lift that box. And he lifted the box and they put it down. He said, now you're as weak as a woman. Just in case the racism wasn't enough, let's go for some sexism too, shall we? You are now weak as a woman. And he reached over and, of course, because of the electromagnet being switched on, could no longer lift the box. And that was seen as the power of the French over the Algerians. And then, just because...
Now, that pisses me off. Well, I'm asked every now and then, is there some point in time in the past that I want to go back to? It would be then.
Well, no,
I'll go back and kick some ass.
Then, just to make sure, they took the battery that they had in there and put a jolt through the handle that knocked the strongest, just knocked the strongest man in the tribe back on his ass. They electrocuted him. So, yes, magicians have used emerging technology. You feel good about that, sir?
Man. So, Susanna, you can perform magic using neuroscience that we are all sort of victims of, the shortcomings of our mind, or you can use magic that exploits well-known laws of physics, knowing that who you're doing the trick on, the way they don't know any physics at all.
Yes.
Yes, okay.
There you go. I'm so glad we cleared all this up. Thank you all for coming, and have a great evening.
But I think that it's the same concern whether technology can be used for good and evil, and I think magic, as any other human enterprise, can misuse technology, but that's not a problem that specifically affects magic. Is just how technology is out there, and technology per se is neither good nor evil.
But so there's also like spiritualism, right, which is another point of access, at least I guess we imagine, into how people think and feel, and certainly like what they believe. And you think of spiritualism, magic, and science at one point all being one and the same, because they all were some mystery that people didn't really know or understand. And I was curious about that connection, and I asked Penn and Teller about it. Let's check it out.
Spiritualism, which hits in the late 19th century, is really this very noble attempt. It's an attempt to use science to look into religion. It's a pretty noble attempt. And the guys who first started looking into this were really sincere, running real experiments. You know, we want to see if there's ether that escapes at the time of death, and we want to see if it lives on. It was really noble stuff by very, very good men and women.
I, too, am respectful of people honestly attempting to measure their religion with science.
Sure.
I remember back when, when x-rays were discovered, it was, if this allows you to see inside the body, let's look inside the body of someone dying.
Yeah.
And then at the moment they're dead, will there be a spirit that will manifest?
And the way of the soul.
Yeah, all of this. And so I don't have a problem.
No, that's not to be ridiculed.
Right, right.
That is to be
I don't even have a problem with the phrenologists. At least they were trying to measure something, the bumps and wiggles in the head.
Yeah.
But the fact that it was irrelevant needs to be determined later,
sure.
Right? So I give them slack as long as it's not used for nefarious, evil, exploitative ways.
And even when it was used for evil, exploitative ways, the people who first started it out might not have had that in their hearts.
Exactly.
And we have to remember that. You know, it's when people start blaming Darwin for eugenics. Well, no.
Another use of sort of illusion and pseudoscience is in the field of sort of psychic mediums, people who talk to dead people.
Yes.
We'll hit that next when Star Talk returns.
I don't know what to tell you. I'm not a fortune teller.
Hey, are you worried about light pollution stealing our view of the stars at night? Well, if you are, you're not alone. And the nonprofit International Dark Sky Association is working to protect the night skies for present and future generations. That's why Celestron and Star Talk Radio have teamed up to support the IDA this November and December with a special contest. For the first 2 weeks of December, we're asking our fans to remember in December. Just submit your favorite outdoor moment from 2015 to be entered to win, as long as that favorite moment has something to do with looking up. For each of the remaining 2 weeks of the contest, we'll pick one Star Talk fan photo to win an International Dark Sky Association 2016 calendar. All entries will be entered into the monthly drawing for a Celestron Cosmos 60 AZ telescope, and the grand prize drawing for a Nexstar Evolution 6 computerized telescope. To submit your photos, you must be following at Celestron on Twitter or at Celestron Universe on Instagram. All entries must include the hashtag StarTalkCYV. Visit Celestron.com for contest rules, and no purchase is necessary. Winners will be announced on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook every Monday.
This is Star Talk.
Welcome back to Star Talk, right here in the Cullman Hall of the Universe. I love saying that.
Welcome to the Hall of the Universe.
That sounds good.
Yeah. So, Chuck, great, always great to have you. And Susanna, we're featuring my interview with Penn and Teller. They're magicians, illusionists, and they're also have deep respect for science and skepticism and have used some of that energy and interest to explore claims that people make in the name of science, in the name of sort of spiritualism, that where they might actually be frauds, outright frauds. And one sort of branch of this are psychic mediums. These are the people who talk to dead people.
Yes.
Right? People, they're spirits of dead people, not the decomposing right. body, I presume.
But more importantly, those spirits talk back.
That's right. So I ask Penn and Teller about this, because I know they've thought about it. Let's see where they take us.
The most valuable thing I have is the memory of my mom and dad. Now, if you come along and say you can communicate with my mom and dad after death, and I believe you even for a moment, and I am grieving and desperate, you can lie to yourself and tell yourself that you are giving me some solace by letting me communicate with my mom. But what you are also doing is you are giving me things that my mom and dad never said. You are taking the memories that I have and you are polluting them in order for your money or glory or self-deception. And that is to me, and I didn't understand this until my mom died. I did not understand how horrific that is to take the most important thing in my heart and distort it. Your mom says now she has a dog. You know, whatever it's gonna be.
Yeah.
Every moment that I had with my mom and dad is precious.
And
to
if
me.
I'm gullible, I'll say, you know, when I was a kid, she said she liked
sure,
dogs.
Of course,
yeah.
But no matter what.
And also, I start filling it in.
So the memories that you have that are accurate are to be guarded very carefully.
Harry Houdini had a very similar way of thinking. I was reminded of Harry Houdini started as a believer in communicating with the dead, and his mother had died, so he went to this famous medium who was the wife of Arthur Conan Doyle, and she held this session. She started to contact with his mother, and then the mother spoke through the medium, and he said, Harry, I'm so happy to talk to you. I love you so much. And Harry Houdini was enraged because his actual name was Eric, and his mother only ever spoke to him in German.
Medium didn't know German.
And didn't know his name.
But if there are people not as astute as Harry Houdini who might have taken the medium's read and say, oh, I wonder when she learned to speak to me in English, and start filling in the memories and the rest of that story, right? I mean, many people have that susceptibility in the face of even incorrect
absolutely. And if
recovered
you need,
memories.
If you need to believe, no amount of evidence is going to convince you of the contrary.
And that's what it is. It's the want to believe. You know, my father passed just last year, and a funny thing happened. Right after him passing, I got a phone call from my father's cell phone 2 days after he died.
Ooh.
So I know he's dead. And the phone rings with his, and I picked it up, and of course it was a blank line. And a friend of mine was like, yo, man, that's cool, man. That's your father actually reaching out to you from beyond to let you know that he's okay. And I went, you don't know my father. The roaming charges from beyond the grave. That man would never pay.
To see you come to terms with that and recover it and kept some rationality in it all. So, Susanna, this need to believe, even to fill in, I assume this is a well-understood and well-studied phenomenon among neuroscientists.
Well, we are wired to find meaning. We try to connect cause and effect all the time, whether their cause and effect are connected in the real world.
Causally or not.
Or not. And this is what happens in a magic show. The magician gives you a false cause. It's the magic wand makes the rabbit disappear, and the magic wand is the cause. In reality, the cause is something very different. And
so they create the correlation without the cause and effect.
Exactly.
Is, yeah.
And you go to a psychic and they give you something that looks like a very tangible evidence if you don't stop and think about it. And you may not want to stop and think about it because you're missing that person and you're in a vulnerable position, so you're not thinking clearly to begin with.
So that's a really important point, and that makes me much more exploitable in the hands of someone who knows the neuroscience of my grief.
Exactly.
So skepticism, when I think of it, it's more of a defense, an antidote to pseudoscience and to all the charlatans who would try to fool you into thinking something is true that is not. And some of them exploit the weaknesses of our neurological wiring. Others use illusion. But it's a good thing there are people out there fighting the good fight. One of them is Michael Shermer. Michael Shermer is the founding publisher of Skeptic Magazine. He's also a monthly columnist for Scientific American. And guess what? I've got Michael Shermer standing by on a live video call.
Ooh.
Yes. Guys, can you put on Michael Shermer?
Hey, Neil.
Hey, Michael. Hey, Michael. Wait. No, you're just showing off your backyard there, you know.
Hey, you've been invited here, man. You have a standing invitation, and we can hike right up that hill behind me, which is where they hauled the telescopes up for Mount Wilson originally back in the 1890s by mule.
Yeah, he's right. I'm 0 for 2 in his invitations to his home to have dinner on that porch, just so you know.
Well, I wouldn't go either if somebody was going to make me haul some telescopes up a hill.
So, Michael, you've written many books, most recently The Moral Arc, but that's not why we called you. It's because in 2011 you wrote a book, The Believing Brain, and then you had a really long subtitle. I got to look this one up. From Ghosts and Gods to Politics and Conspiracies, How We Construct Beliefs and Reinforce Them as Truths. This sounds like you're just out to ruin everybody's day. So, what is magical thinking, and why is it bad? Isn't it just fun? I mean, why should anybody care?
Well, first of all, our brains are incapable of not forming beliefs. So the natural propensity is to find patterns. A is connected to B. It sure looks like it is. And sometimes it really is connected. Sometimes it's not. How can we really tell? Science is the answer to that. So my thought experiment is, imagine you're a hominid on the plains of Africa 3.5 million years ago. You're a little 3.5 foot tall primate called Lucy, let's say. And you hear a rustle in the grass. Is it a dangerous predator or is it just the wind? Well, if you think the rustle in the grass is a dangerous predator and it turns out it's just the wind, that's a harmless type one error, a false positive. You thought there was a connection, there's no connection. But if you think that the rustle in the grass is just the wind and it turns out it's a predator, congratulations, you're lunch. You've just won a Darwin Award for taking yourself out of the gene pool early.
Okay.
So basically what I'm arguing is that our brains are designed to assume all rustles in the grass are dangerous predators just in case. The cost of that is that we tend to think things are real that aren't. So that's magical thinking, superstition, that's believing in homeopathy or astrology or tarot cards or palm reading or any of these kinds of things, because people get just enough hits, like the gambler, you only have to pay off the slot machine every 30 or 40 pulls or so to keep the person sitting there. We just glom onto those patterns. You know, in a way, all science begins with the null hypothesis. We just assume your hypothesis is not true until you prove otherwise. You provide the evidence. And then when you do, we're willing to believe it. You know, show me the body. I'll believe in Bigfoot or Loch Ness Monster. You know, aliens, where are they? Well, they're hidden in a spacecraft area in Area 51. Okay, can we go there? No. Well, if we can't go there, if we can't ever see the evidence, then I just can't believe. You just have to show me the evidence.
Well, Michael, thanks for being on Star Talk. Good to see you again.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
All right, we're good. Thanks for Michael Shermer. So up next, my friend Bill Nye the Science Guy explains why we want to believe in magic when Star Talk returns.
This is Star Talk.
We're back on Star Talk. We've been talking about skepticism, the science of illusion, magic, and who else would I do that with other than Penn and Teller? Penn and Teller. They had a Broadway show, came through town, I nabbed them, we did this. It's been beautiful. Beautiful. Now, in this segment, we always like to catch up with my good friend Bill Nye, formerly a resident of the West Coast, but he moved to New York, now a permanent resident of New York City.
He's a New Yorker.
And we catch up with him to see what he's got to say about the subject at hand. And let's find out what Bill Nye has to say about why we want to believe.
This is the original metamorphosis trunk from the 1890s. Harry Houdini would lock his wife, Bess, in a burlap sack in the trunk. A few minutes later, Bess would be on the outside, and Harry Houdini would be in a sack locked in the trunk. Was it the supernatural? Was it science? Or was it just plain trickery? You see, making observations and drawing conclusions, that's what we do. And until very recently in human history, everything that we couldn't explain, we explained with the paranormal. And the reason it works is because we want it to work. We want to believe that there's a supernatural force permeating the universe. And if we could just access that force, we'd have supernatural powers too. We could escape from anything. We could move physical objects with our minds from one place to another. In fact, we could go anywhere we want to. We could move ourselves from one place to another anywhere in the universe, just like that.
Bill.
Nice.
So tell me a little bit about Houdini and what legacy of his we have kept from all that time.
Well, certainly in the skepticism movement, Houdini was perhaps the most important skeptic. A lot of people have followed in his footsteps.
At a time when spiritual mediums were at a height.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're at the moment where spiritualism develops, and they're trying to start off with good intentions and trying to figure out whether one can measure the supernatural, but then things don't work out as expected, and some magicians, Houdini, Maskelyne as well, start providing evidence that these seances, they're basically theater shows with special effects. And
a magician would be best able to reveal any trickery in ways that someone who is naturally wants to believe would be incapable of noticing.
Absolutely. And Harry Houdini, for instance, he was part of a committee that was put together by Scientific American back in the day to try to debunk some of these paranormal claims. And that even in more...
Or find out if they're true. I mean, either, right? Yeah. Experiment on them.
Exactly. And this is something that James Randi, for instance, is very careful about with the $1 million challenge, to say that he's not taking the position that this is impossible, just highly improbable.
Just prove it.
But keeping an open mind, an open-minded attitude that, maybe there's something about it. We don't think this is very likely, but why not? Let's give it a try. The brain is going to try to make sense of things. We're always constantly trying to find order, and if there is no order, we impose our own order, and we call it reality. So we do this all the time, and especially if we are in an emotionally vulnerable situation, we know a magician. Magicians use humor in their shows. One of the magicians that we wrote this article with, Johnny Thompson, he says, when the audience laughs, time stops. The magician can do anything because nobody's going to figure it out. And this is humor, but it works with any other powerful emotion.
Okay, well, you're getting a little too close to home right now.
Well, Penn and Teller are some of the best at it. And in my conversation with them, they revealed to me the one true secret of magic. One true secret. And I'm going to share it with you right now. You ready? Check it out.
You know, a lot of magicians make this stupid mistake of going, turn off your brain and come on a little bit of a fantasy trip with me. You know, I had a dream last night where I was painting a picture, and you go, shut up. When you are watching Shakespeare, they say, let's pretend this is there's been a wreck. Let's pretend there's a storm, and let's pretend that this guy you saw in a deodorant commercial is actually a kink. And the whole audience goes, okay, we'll do that.
We're good with that.
And then you play along. In magic, it is not magic unless you have the skepticism underneath it. So if we say during our show, this is a perfectly ordinary deck of cards, we have to give you some evidence of that. Because if we say to you, this is a perfectly ordinary deck of cards, you go, okay. And then you picked a card at random, okay. If you give us the willing suspension of disbelief, we can't work. We can only work with the unwilling suspension of disbelief. In other words, we have to take you there. You can't give it to us.
So just so I make it clear to myself, because it's a very deep sentence, if I actually believe that everything you did was real, then I don't think you're doing magic.
Right. We want the credit. That's
you want the credit for actually doing magic.
That's a really important point. Really important point. If we tell you that there's really this power in the universe and lets me read your mind, we get no credit for anything. You know, everybody has this credit. We want the credit that we spent years memorizing stuff to be able to do tricks. We spent years and years and years learning stuff. I mean, there's only one secret in magic, one secret at all, and that is we are willing to work harder than you think the tricks are worth.
There it is. Mm-hmm. You said earlier in this program, Susanna, that it could take them months or years to develop something that takes minutes to perform on a stage.
And that's one of the tragedies of magic, I think, that you go to a concert and you see somebody playing violin beautifully and you think, wow, that's a lot of work that got into that. But if the magician is good, everything is going to seem so simple and so natural, not choreographed, that you have no inkling about how much work goes into it.
So Chuck, Susanna, allow me to offer some concluding reflections on this topic.
Well, now that you're standing, I'm sure they're going to be very important.
When I think of a magician, what distinguishes them from people of antiquity who may have wielded a power that no one knew of, they didn't tell others that they knew something about how nature worked. I see people taken in by charlatans, people who exploit what they already know to be the shortcomings of human attention, human consciousness, human awareness. I'm angered by that. Rather than go out and beat them on the head, I, as an educator, want, and Susanna, no doubt as well, want to educate you up front. And that level of education, that level of science literacy, that level of skepticism becomes antidote. It becomes an inoculation against all those who would exploit you for their gain. You've been watching Star Talk. And I've been your personal astrophysicist, Neil deGrasse Tyson. And thanking Chuck and Susanna, I bid you, as always, to keep looking up.
MutinyRadio.org.
Find us at MutinyRadio.org and on iTunes Radio under the eclectic genre.
Grassroots Radio.
We put quality first.
Listen in to Pamtastic's Comedy Clubhouse. This weekly podcast open mic with a live audience features the best of San Francisco's underground comedy scene. Once a month, the open mic becomes the Mutiny Radio Comedy Showcase, featuring and paying local comics with the take from the door. Free wine is always provided for the audience for a donation of $10 that gets equally divided among comedians and the station because comics should be paid for their art. Hell, go buy a comic a drink just because they're poor and funny. The most badass open mic for over a year and a half, Pam wants you to come inside her clubhouse. Join the fun, be part of the mayhem, or just listen in to the aftermath every Friday from 8 to 11 p.m. until the wheels fall off on Mutiny Radio.
You're listening to SF Intercom. On mic number 1, 2, 4, there we go. It wouldn't be a normal show unless mic number 2 was actually mic number 4. It's going to be an awesome show. I'll give you details in just a little bit. Up now is the Dodos with Fools. I am not a big fan of like long silences at the end of songs, and I always forget that the Dodos put like, what, 10 seconds of silence at the end of their songs, so it's like not a casual transition. But anyway, Riot.
Bye.
Pretty much love coming in here every Sunday and like being all like stressed out and tense and being like, that was a long week. And then I just play music that I really like. And after 2 hours of sitting here and just going like, oh, that song was cool, that song was cool, that song was cool. And then like live music comes in and I'm like, oh man, that was so entertaining. That like when I finally leave here, I go, man, I am so chill. I'm going to eat a burrito and go to bed. Anyway, today's going to be a fun show. I've been broadcasting on Twitter, if you've seen that, or on Facebook, that Kendra was going to come in here. And we're gonna push that as like closer to like 6:30 or 6:40 so that those people watching the football game can like start to wind that down and then be like, oh, you know what, I should listen to some radio perhaps, right? No? Yeah? All right. But it's going to be fun. It's going to be worth it. And keep tuning in. And right now, we're listening to Cannons and Clouds. They're a fun band here from San Francisco, and I've seen them alive a few times. And enjoy. In a manner in which I could not argue, and after all, we sold our graces, led them past brilliant white faces, and all we can hope for is to see.
wrote me and followed your words to the bottom of the page to find all the things that you tried to show me months ago at the bottom of the page. All the words that I once knew, oh, I gave to you, yes, I gave to you, and all of the words that I want to know have dried up in the back of my throat. I set sail across your words, hoping never to find shore, never to find shore. And in the ocean of ink, I started to sink before your words filled my lungs with breath again. City sky, the yellows and pinks tell my heart to think and my mind to feel this love that is real, and to let my lips say at last everything you mean. So I whisper slow three words you already know, and the marching band falls in line, and the symphony leads your lips.
Comes to me cause I wanna be free when I see your loving arms. Yes, I wanna be free when I see your loving arms.
That's a little hot. There we go. Mic one doesn't work. That's unfortunate. But I was just thinking that I'll give Andy a shout out. He's in, here in the studio and does Thursday breakfast with me, and I like catching him off guard. So he's like, wait, that's branches. And then he was like, figured that he was cool after that. And then all of a sudden, Before the Brave comes on, he goes, that's Before the Brave. And he's doing work with him. So I was just trying to like keep him on his toes and whatnot. But I have Kendra here setting up her mics. And so after this little Fox Tales Brigade stuff, we'll go into that, and it'll be awesome. But because she has such a Fox Tales, Laura from Fox Tales has such a soft voice, I'm going to start this one over because you're missing so much delicateness, and it's just fun. So here he goes.
Blankets are warmer when they're not neat. A table is better with cake and tea. And apples taste better when they're not sweet.
Bathroom feeling my feathers brought the